Bloody Elbow presents the Show Money Podcast, the podcast covering the business side of combat sports in depth and provides continuous reporting on the antitrust suits the UFC is battling. The crew features Paul Gift, the economist, Jason Cruz, the lawyer, and John S. Nash, Bloody Elbow's chief financial columnist. Pay Bloody Elbow Podcast Substack subscribers will hear bonus content, if available, at the end of the broadcast. Be sure to subscribe at bloodyelbow.substack.com for our newsletter and at bloodyelbowpodcast.substack.com for our podcast network. Follow us on Twitter at Bloody Elbow, Facebook at facebook.com/bloodyelbowblog, and as always, on bloodyelbow.com. Thanks for listening. Here are your experts.
Welcome to Show Money, the only show exclusively dedicated to the business of mixed martial arts. I'm Paul Gift, the economist. With me, as always, we have Jason Cruz, our lawyer, and John Nash, the man who knows everyone and everything in MMA, and really showed it this week, if you were paying attention. We're recording today, not on a Sunday, on a Friday, May, 19th, talking about Francis Ngannou going to the PFL. We usually have a decent lag waiting till Sundays, but we are only 3 days behind as we're recording this. And we're going to talk to you about that occurrence from our business perspective, and maybe get into a little bit of disclosures on UFC financials, even though a lot of it was things we kind of already knew, but now we got confirmation. And so we're going to jump into Francis Ngannou signing with the PFL. The question was where he would go. Would he go to boxing first? Would he go to Bellator? Would he go to PFL? Would he go to ONE? Would he go back to the UFC? We finally got confirmation that he is headed to the PFL next year, and he might take a boxing match this year if he can get one worked out. The news broke a few days ago, Jason, and there was a little bit of uncertainty of what was going on with Ngannou, and now we have more certainty. What were your first thoughts on the matter?
I thought that the deal was a calculated risk by PFL. I think that Francis Ngannou held out for what he wanted, and for the most part, he probably got what he wanted in terms of where he wanted to be. I think you kind of alluded to the point that two things stood out of the deal was the fact that, one, he would be able to promote on his own for boxing, so he's not tied to the PFL. Think about Conor McGregor and how he was tied a little bit to Zuffa, not a little bit, a lot to Zuffa, when he fought Floyd Mayweather in that fight 4 or 5 years ago. So that is an interesting thing. The other thing that I found compelling was the fact that he made sure that he wasn't going to be tied to the organization in any way. And I'm specifically talking about the Champions Clause. I think that was similar in NFL or NBA with no trade clauses, where if you're a star player, you can negotiate a no trade clause. Ngannou has bet on himself, and we see that an organization sees value in Francis, and therefore he's able to do these things in which he can negotiate favorable terms in his favor. So those are the two key things that I saw. The money, of course, is very, very good, and John will tell you about what he's heard about that. But I thought the money was very good. I think that he comes off as a very compelling figure in the MMA industry because of the deal he brokered. It's not just for himself. It appears as though it will be for other people. And obviously the component of becoming an ambassador in Africa is large, simply because, you know, the PFL might be beat the UFC to it. The UFC has been rumored to be going down to Africa and building another institute down there, or at least holding shows and trying to recruit on the continent. And again, global expansion, as we see undercurrent in this Francis Ngannou negotiation, is that he is a worldwide star, not just North America, but a worldwide star. So the big question for me is, will the PFL recoup the investment it's made in Francis?
That is a huge question.
Yeah, monstrous question. That's the. But I don't know if that's the. I mean, honestly, I don't expect them to. I think they're thinking they're not going to recoup it as direct cash from his events. I think they're looking at more as.
Key phrase being direct cash. Yes, I know. Yeah. We know where you're going with this.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, yeah, there is in some ways he's a loss leader in some ways, but I do think that they have to be thinking that hopefully his events do something on pay-per-view that they want to get a good chunk of that money back that they're going to put into them. They want to get something, you know, that they don't want it all to be going out as marketing, you know, expenses. But he is, as an MMA contract, he's not the highest paid MMA fighter. We know Conor McGregor is the highest paid, but if Conor McGregor was fighting under Francis Ngannou's contract in the UFC, he'd be making a lot more. He'd be getting a much bigger percentage of the event revenue because the upside. So there, in that way, in some ways, you could argue it's the best contract that we have seen in a major promotion. I'm using air quotes there because if you're listening and not watching, because I don't think PFL is now entering maybe major promotion category, but I do think it's a little premature to call them like a real, you know, a major promotion before this. And I don't consider anybody really a major promotion outside UFC and then slightly less Bellator for quality of their fighters. But yeah, so he's going to be getting a sizable amount of money. I mean, I heard high seven figures, and now it sounds like it's towards the higher end of that high seven figures, close to the eight figure mark. From my understanding, he gets back end. He has supposedly no champions clause, no extensions. I'm sure there's something about him boxing that his contract doesn't start. PFL, I'm sure, actually loves that he's going to go box, you know, because they don't have to pay him right away. They get, you know, people are like, well, this is terrible for him because they don't have a fight. They have to wait. I think the PFL is happy that he's going off to box because it's free marketing for a while and they can do another round of fundraising based on the fact that they've got, you know, they're making big moves. So on that end, that's great for them. But the big question too is, can they, I think part of this was supposed to send out a signal because the PFL has been trying to get UFC fighters over. They've been given $1 million prizes in their tournaments. They pledged 50% of the pay-per-view revenue on their pay-per-view, whatever super fight league promotion thingy. They're doing whatever they can. And not many big name, in fact, no real major UFC fighters has come over. And so I think the step in Ngannou is they have to demonstrate, they're showing people we are putting a lot of money. If you're a star, look at the contract Ngannou got, you could get a contract like him, something like that. And then on top of the $2 million guaranteed for his opponent, it's kind of genius because what a PR stunt makes, you know, I mean, Ngannou might've been serious about it, but it was a great PR move. It makes him look great. Like, what a great guy looking out for other fighters. But for PFL, and actually this came from Ngannou, he's been asking for this for a while, so this wasn't their idea, but for them, it comes out being a positive because it's a recruiting tool, right? Fighters, you know, that it can draw fighters in. They'll look at that. That's much more than most people in MMA make. And finally, for Ngannou, it's a kind of a quality control. You're not going to waste $2 million on nobody. You're going to like, well, we got to pay the guy $2 million. We better go get someone better. And so there's a lot of benefits. I think that's the one people are like, oh, how can they spend so much? That's the one thing I think is probably the smartest aspect of it. But the question is, can they get UFC fighters to go over there? Because non-UFC fighters are not going to sell. They're going to need guys like, is Stipe Miocic going to look at this and say, and I don't even know if Stipe has re-signed his contract, but he's on the old one. It should have terminated by now. Is he going to look at this and say, you know, I'm going to rethink going re-signing with the UFC to fight Jones, that there might be a better deal? That's the big question for me. If they can get that, if they can get some of those bigger name fighters to come over and get on pay-per-view, then it really means something.
Might be onto something.
Yeah, but the question is, UFC has kind of converted their contracts back to what they were before. Are the fighters going to be able to even fight out their contracts like Ngannou did?
Well, so let me ask you just some quick clarification questions, if you know, John. So champions clause, exclusive negotiation period, right to match. Is it that none of those three things are in there?
I don't know for sure. I didn't talk to it. But my understanding is that he was asking for and got that when his contract is up, that there's nothing that's going to lock him into the promotion. He's completely free. So take what that will. We didn't get, you know, I didn't find all the details out or who knows, but that's what my understanding was. I was told that he was looking for a contract that when it's over at some point. Now, I don't know. There might be options. There might be an extra fight or two. People were somewhat vague on two or three fights, but it was supposedly a short contract. Maybe there was an option for an extra fight, but when it's done, there's no other provision clauses that's going to hold them to it.
And one other question, the payday. So the big issue with the UFC was that, what were they offering? Around 8 million, somewhere around 8 million. And
supposedly, sorry to interrupt, but supposedly it was best sources, multiple sources was it was 8 million for Jon Jones only, but plus pay-per-view points. Everybody in the industry, you talk to anybody in the industry, they think that fight would sell gangbusters. Right. I'm not just MMA, I'm talking about all these people that follow the sport and pay-per-views. They think that would be like a million plus selling pay-per-view, a monster hit for the, one of the biggest UFC hits ever. And so, but 8 million plus pay-per-view, but his other fights were supposedly a couple million lower than that.
And the big question is, if he lost the title, what would he go down to with this contract? Is it 8 to 10 million, all of his fights in the PFL?
Yeah. My understanding is it's the same. I think he has something like a rematch clause. If he loses the first fight, he gets the same pay and fights the guy again. And so, but I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's a third fight on that. I don't think there's more than a third fight. I think that's the limit. But again, I'm going off, you know, multiple sources trying to piece together, and some of them are a little vague and the best information I have, it's the same pay every time.
All right. So my main takeaway from this that I would share with people is it seems like a great deal for Francis Ngannou. But the thing I would always remember, it honestly reminds me a lot of someone at a high level in a business at VP or executive type level going to work for a startup, which is there's a potential big payday, but it's also a big risk. So PFL to me, we can call them whatever we want in terms of two, three, whatever promotion, but they're still a startup. They are a startup. They reliant on investor money. They've gotten somewhere around $200 million. And they have a valuation around $500 million, which is actually not that great. But it appears that, you know, his first fight is like pretty much locked in. There's not much risk on that one. And if he could get a good boxing match by the end of this year for however much money, that alone would seem to make it worthwhile the risk that he took. But the second fight I would call sort of probable. It depends on how everything else goes. The third fight, you can't count on at all. So you can't count on these things like you would a UFC type contract. But it seems like if things go right, it could do well. And do we know, did he get equity in PFL or PFL Africa?
I got that from the New York Times. I wasn't even asking people about equity.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I just assume, I guess I my understanding and also assumption is who wants equity in these startup MMA promotions?
Right.
I mean, is it really going to be worth anything some years from now? It's pretty risky money. So
it's very risky money, especially if it was PFL Africa instead of PFL.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did not ask. I literally spaced on the equity because I had just assumed no one's going to ask for equity. So I guess I'll have to go around to reinvestigate that. But the answer is no, I don't know.
But it's one of those things that could, you know, if things go right, it could be worth a lot of money. The one thing people also don't realize is when you get equity, you owe taxes on that. Like it could actually cost him money. And it's not that big of a deal for someone making as much money as him, but it's not like, it's not just like, oh, I get this total free roll. When you vest, I'm assuming he has to vest, and he's going to have to pay taxes on whatever this called a 409A valuation is. So there's risk involved for him too, but it seems like fight one and possible boxing, if he can get something good alone, would make, if he's a prize fighter, would make this as a good gamble for Francis Ngannou. And then we'll see how it goes after that. But I just caution people to not take this sort of three fight, whatever contract it is, and call it set in stone, because PFL is still very much a startup. And if Ngannou's first fight doesn't go well, yeah, man, that's going to affect their fundraising and who knows. Yeah, if Jake also, Paul doesn't draw.
If Jake Paul ends up not fighting MMA and they don't have a pay-per-view with him, if they don't get more funds. I mean, I don't know. They raised $200 million, but what's their burn rate? We've seen from one championship, they have a pretty high burn rate. One championship seems to. PFL's got a very similar business, I think, too. And except the big difference is one championship is out buying metrics and social media and stuff. And I give PFL credit in this. They're putting the money in trying to get fighters. And I think that's a better – could blow through all the money still. But that seems to be a better asset to have because something can happen with that, I think, than what the money one has spent on the metrics.
Did you guys like that story about Chatri, who was like supposedly in the meeting talking about their metrics? And Gano was like, I don't care.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
The amazing metrics. But yeah, that's the, the thing is too, is that, I mean, part of it too is what I think, I don't know if PFL, do you think PFL's come to a realization that they've got to put on big fights? Because it seems like the whole pitch, if you ever listen to Don Davis's pitches and stuff, I mean, they're pretty absurd what he's saying about MMA, and they're trying to sell the idea that the league structure is going to draw people in and that's how it's going to be all exciting. They're going to expand everywhere. But the truth is, honestly, no one really cares. It's fighters that people want to follow. And do you think this is a kind of a one-time gimmick, or do you think they're really going to make a full push in this? They want to have fighters and names and big fights.
Well, my head shaking tells what I think. Jason, I've been on this for a while, right? That they realized that their business is not going anywhere like that, and they needed to make a pivot, and this seems to be it. What do you think, Jason?
Well, I think that they do need to come through with another pay-per-view this upcoming year, and then when Ngannou comes in, they need to have an opponent for Ngannou. I wanted to go back really quickly to the deal in that it is a calculated risk on the part of PFL. I think one of the ancillary benefits of the deal is that if Ngannou becomes an ambassador to Africa, that they perhaps find somebody up and coming that they can recruit and cultivate as their own into the league, whether it's MMA. I mean, yeah, basically as a up and coming fighter, a homegrown fighter. And under like Ngannou as the father figure for the individual, it's a calculated risk simply because, like, as you guys pointed to, you know, what if it doesn't go well? What if he loses? What if he taps out in the first round? What if Ngannou gets hurt? He is 36 years old and has an injury history, so there is an issue if this gets delayed a year or two because of injury. I would suspect that the PFL is in trouble. You know, we're all hoping, and I'm sure the PFL is, and probably has done a health check or a physical on Ngannou, that Ngannou can start as soon as possible, whenever his contract starts, and they could get going with the marketing and everything like that. But yeah, it's the pivot for PFL to start producing.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is they're pivoting, but I mean, the big question is, I mean, the UFC, we all know, has a lockdown on almost all the major talent. All the major talent has gone to the UFC. That's all the recognizable figures. Can you get it? Ngannou's a special case. We know that his contract was changed. He's one of the group of fighters, the first batch with the changed contracts. The UFC's changed them back again. Are we going to get anybody even able to exit the UFC? Are we going to get a migration out of the UFC of named fighters that can potentially move the needle? I think that's the biggest question. I mean, that's the whole thing's dependent on that happening.
Yeah, that's where I was about to go to with a question to you guys, which is, I think we all agree that PFL executives realize that their strategy of, you know, merit-based isn't working for the amount of money that they were investing and throwing around. And they needed to pivot to something like this, and that whole who would the other fighter be? And beyond that, the fighter for Ngannou, you need to start developing more talent as well. Nice. I mean, Ngannou and one other fighter are great, but that's not making your business. Kayla Harrison, I guess, could leave after this year, possibly. And then you've got Jake Paul, who, I mean, he doesn't seem to be a long-term answer, more of a kind of gimmicky type answer. What, who do you guys think the I guess they need to build a roster where they could support this type of money that they're spending. But beyond that, they first have to get someone for Ngannou. Do you guys think Fabricio Werdum could be that guy, or would it have to be someone from the UFC?
No.
Or am I biased because I went to Werdum combat team?
I would say the one thing that they could tie into their own brand is to have the PFL heavyweight champion to be the one to face Ngannou. The problem is, as John is shaking his head, that we don't even know who is in that heavyweight tournament this year. I mean, no, there are people in the heavyweight tournament this year, but
Mo Green is in the heavyweight tournament.
No brand names. And the problem is Junior Dos Santos or Fabricio Werdum. We've seen, I mean, and even a Ben Rothwell, those guys are not the guys.
People saw them get bumped from the UFC. Their brand is somewhat tarnished. I mean, the big one is, can you get Miosic to leave? I mean, John Jones signed a new deal. He ain't going anywhere. Can you get a few guys that are further down, maybe not as well known in the UFC? And then I guess what I would do is say, forget the tournament and giving that guy a title shot. Maybe get the winner of this tournament and put him in another four-man tournament with Werdum and Overeem or JDS, whoever you can get. And then, you know, and then maybe a UFC guy that you can get that's top 10 or whatever. And the winner of that, there might be enough like, oh, this is something I'm interested in seeing, because this guy now looks like, you know, like he's a serious threat. Because the problem is no one's going to go see. I think sometimes hardcores, whatever MMA fans, they're almost like pro wrestling. They know the old names and they like them. But I mean, the hit, you got to look at like boxing matches in a weird way. In boxing, it's the whatever it is, the general fan kind of catches on what's a relevant big fight, and then they follow the more hardcore fans. And if you're not appealing them with a serious, what's a real serious fight that's going to grab the attention of the press and stuff, it's not going to happen. So I think you got to start working. Like, we're going to have a 4-man tournament, build the next guy. We're going to try to get the biggest name we can get out of the UFC. And then maybe sign someone and build them up. And that's has some potential. Dillian White is a boxer. He fought MMA once. So we'll give you a pretty decent 3-fight deal and give him 2 fights, build them up, and then maybe convince people that he might have a shot.
Right. Yeah. And if they had someone like an AJ McKee in that type of weight class, then that would be perfect. You know, if it was heavy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone with that level of star power in a different promotion, that would be perfect. But man, the Bellator roster, even if they bought them at heavyweight, I don't want to see Ngannou fight any of them. PFL, no.
I mean, it'd be a world of difference if PFL was Strikeforce.
Right.
This had happened with Strikeforce, that Ngannou had left and magically went back to the Strikeforce of 2009 and 10. You'd be like, oh my God, the potential there is huge. They are going to make money on these fights. You know, maybe not ungodly money, but they will, you know, it takes some pay-per-view buys, but it doesn't have to be outrageous. You know, they have to sell, you know, I'm sure if you give them a big enough name, they can sell a $2 million gate because they'd have to get the people that can push the gate tickets. I don't know if PFL has that, those people employed by them. Steal them from Bellator. They've got $1 million gates under their under their belt. But you need to do that. And then, you know, they keep now with the digital buys being worth more, you don't have to sell as many. You'd still, you know, to cover the cost, you'd still have to probably sell close to 300,000 unless you did a monster gate. But you know, but again, I don't think Ngannou is going to sell break even, but you want to cut down how much you're losing. So if you can sell 150,000, you're like, well, we spent a lot less on that than we could have.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump to you in a second, Jason, but the UFC probably loves this. If nothing else, then for the Johnson antitrust case, if that ever starts going again, for that antitrust case, they probably love this. It has no effect for people who are wondering. It has no effect on the original one, Kung Lee, zero.
That's almost absurd, actually. You think about it. In a weird way, it shows you how effed up our antitrust laws are and stuff. Because think of this: we have a system where fighters are locked in these contracts and can't get out. As soon as we change the contract just slightly, one fighter, actually more than one, Paulo Costa, took advantage of it too, to get a much better deal than standard. And Ngannou leaves, gets a much better deal than the standard fighter would ever get in the UFC. So we have two examples of the first group of guys that did it. They leave. It's like, what, we have to start doing a we have to start measuring output effects and build some aggression regression analysis to see the effect.
Oh God.
You know, no, it's obvious. You get to be a free agent, a full free agent, right? You get to make a lot more money. And then the next question is people are going to say, well, yeah, but he's going to have no one to fight. Well, that's the other problem. There's no one to fight. No one's testing the market. To me, it's absurd. It just shows the absurdity of the situation. We have a comparative model, boxing. Ngannou's the closest we've seen, the first person to do it, and he gets almost a boxing purse.
Well, okay. I wasn't jumping into the merits of the Johnson antitrust case. All I was saying is that showing one of your big fighters leaving...
I think you're 100% right. I think you're 100% right.
The UFC will like that.
I think you're 100% right. I was quoting about the idea that it doesn't affect the Kung Lee case. I'm like, really? It should show that. Look what happened as soon as we changed the contracts.
Oh, I get you. Going to 27. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's not how that works. So anyway, you guys know my take that the Kung Lee case, even though it's supposed to be certified as a class action, is still in a lot of danger for reasons to do with the quality of the plaintiff's antitrust witnesses. But we'll get to that. If Judge Boulware ever gets off his ass and does his job, we will get to that one. Now I've kind of forgot where I was going with my whole setup here.
Oh, the UFC's happy. No, I agree with the UFC's happy with the Johnson case, but they're doubly happy too, because in a weird way too, you say the reverse. It shows that, oh, well, because you change your contracts back, you're causing damages again. We had a period where you change your contracts, the guy leaves making money. Okay, there's competition. Now no one can leave again in the future because you change your contracts back, but you put a class action waiver. And so you're not worried about the future threat of antitrust lawsuits.
Yeah. Are you seeing them change back? I'm seeing like 30-day exclusive negotiation period and 4 months right to match.
No, the new contracts have a waiver that say you cannot sue for you cannot go to class action.
Yeah,
you have to go to
arbitration.
They also changed the sunset period. The sunset period was when you sign the contract, 5 years later, you're done. And also they can only do no more than 18 months of tolling provisions for turning down fights.
Now that got changed.
So the person like Francis Ngannou who could leave after 5 years, it could end up being 6-7 years before he could leave. You're adding several more years to the contract.
Right, based on injury. But the right to match, I've seen it get a lot shorter.
Oh, but that's not the one I'm concerned about. I'm just saying they changed.
You're worried about extensions.
Yeah, the idea that when can you actually test the market. But the ones I'm seeing contracts still, I think, have a year long of the bigger name fighters still have a year long right to match. It's the lower tier fighters that are 3 or 4 months. I can't remember.
So it might be different types of fighters.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, Jason, what do you think this does what do you think the fighter perspective is on this? If you're a UFC fighter and you've got like one fight left on your contract, what do you say? Well, if you're heavyweight and you want to challenge Ngannou, but what if you think you're kind of like it's going to be hard for people to pull even remotely similar deal that Ngannou got, but what if you're a named fighter and you're close to the end of your contract? Are you seeing this and thinking you want to test the waters with the PFL now? What are you thinking?
Well, I think that you definitely will believe that there is money there to be had because of a lot of what they would perceive as concessions to Ngannou. But I think you'd have to have someone in your camp that's negotiating, letting you know that you are not Francis Ngannou. Now, with that being said, and probably that not happening to a fighter, I think that the PFL will be looking at UFC heavyweight talent just because of the brand, that they could tout them as a former UFC heavyweight challenger or a title contender. Everybody's a title contender. But I think that would be one of the ways that they can couch that in terms of just maybe just building up the PFL heavyweight roster and having some names to the roster. Obviously, you are going to get from the PFL someone who is not a top tier guy simply because now the UFC will probably want to retain a lot of these top 10 heavyweights in one way or another. And even if you get to your last fight on the contract, I don't know if the UFC, how hard the UFC will make it for you to leave. Now, testing the free agent water may be another thing in terms of, well, will the PFL want you? One, two, will they give you Ngannou? And then three, if you get to that point, is there life after Ngannou? So basically, if you get knocked out in a round, what's your future in the PFL looking like? Are you just trying to get back into the PFL heavyweight tournament? Are you going to be on the pay-per-view exclusive roster, or what is your prospect? So those are the questions that if you were testing the water, because initially you see this money similar to other sports. You see one person get paid, you think that that money's flowing out, jumping out of a tree, jumping out of trees. I'm mixing metaphors. Falling off of trees, leaving.
Late on Friday.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that if you are a heavyweight fighter, there is some promise, but then also, again, a little bit of caution.
Absolutely. How about you, John?
Oh, I mean, who are the fighters that are going to be able to leave? I mean, I'm sure Derek Lewis actually might do something, but he's locked up no long-term contract. Yeah. Jones is long-term contract. I'm sure Pavlovich is probably locked into a long-term, you know, at least if it doesn't have to be long-term, it can only be a couple fights. Right. And with time left over. So the UFC just has to time it and say, well, let's drag this out for a year or two before we give him all of his fights, because by that time PFL might be under if they can't get fighters for the face, Ngannou. So, yeah, you know, if they get no momentum, all we have to do is lock up the key fighters, right? The people that move the needle, that have the potential to move the needle. That shouldn't be that hard, actually, you know? Yeah. So that's why I have no, you know, people get excited. I'm excited for Ngannou. I'm excited there might be a kind of a shift, and, you know, people might start realizing what can happen. But without movement of any fighters, nothing's going to happen. Eventually, they're going to go through their cash and they're going to, you know, fall apart, or they're going to cut down their scale, their operations way back, you know, and not have this venture capital and throw out at a fighter and try to get a couple. So you're going to end up with a Bellator situation where it's a slow bleed, but you know,
this needs to, 2024 is going to be a big year for PFL, its metrics, its results, its investors. 2024 is going to be a huge year. It's funny. When you said Derek Lewis, I was like, yes. Oh wait, we've already seen that before. Oh yeah, that sucked ass. but in your instantly, you're kind of like, oh, that'd be awesome. Oh no,
yeah. I don't think it would matter. I think he's got enough name value with you give him one fight to knock someone out. You know, give him a kind of a gimme in the PFL, and you'll get enough people tuning in. It's not, again, there's only a select. The thing is, the real big fights for Ngannou, we haven't built up. We have, like I said, a break even, or perhaps a kind of a successful fight would be Miosic. Who knows if he would do it. It might be one of the, you know, maybe you could take one of the other, the newer guys that are coming on strong, Pavlovich or Gelton Almeida, and churn them into eventually. But I mean, maybe you're lucky with the WWE, you know, maybe what's his name? Gable Stevenson. Apparently not being used much for the WWE. Maybe he makes another comeback to WWE, I mean, to MMA. And if you haven't Ngannou and you're saying, we are willing to give you a boxing split, and you've demonstrated with one fight or something that you can sell pay-per-views with him, he might go, okay, I'll sign with you guys. Give me a handful of fights and then I'll try to, you know, let's do it. But there's, I mean, you're kind of thinking of fantasy situations, because the fighters aren't there. I mean, there's no other options for PFL that I see on the horizon coming out of the UFC. Is there, I mean, is Israel Adesanya going to, you know, leave the UFC? He's locked in. Is Volkanovski going to leave the UFC? Is there anybody going to leave the UFC besides Ngannou? Who even has the opportunity? Sterling? I don't know. They all seem locked into long-term contracts right now. Champion clause.
Yeah, it's hard. If you look at the top five heavyweights, John Jones, according to the UFC rankings, John Jones, Cyril Gane, Sergey Pavlovich, Curtis Blaydes, Tom Aspinall. I mean, those are the five, and then maybe Alexander Volkov, but everybody else is just a guy after that. Sorry if you're listening to this, but like everyone else on that roster, I mean, there's no one else that you would say, I want to pay $60 for to see Ngannou and I don't know, somebody else. You know, it's a hard sell for the PFL, the reality of it. But you know, there's that carrot of $2 million. So if they entertain somebody, you know, if somebody here gets on a streak and they're looking they're entering their last fight. You know, maybe there's something there. Like Stipe, like you said, John, Stipe Miocic.
Maybe. And for Stipe, I guarantee you they're going to pay him more than $2 million. You know, yeah. They'll give him, I bet you they would probably like twice as, you know, half what Ngannou makes, but with the upside. So if it sells something, you know, you could be looking at a bunch of money.
I was going to say, Jason, are you noticing a theme here that John really wants Stipe to go to PFL? It seems to just be a recurring theme.
No,
that's the only name. That's the only
That's the only option. I would love, I want John Jones and Ngannou to fight, but John Jones re-signed with the UFC. So that's now it's, and which is, I mean, that's actually part of it. Whenever it's even Jones going after Ngannou is because he's pissed at or jealous of him that he signed a deal. And he's the one that stuck around and re-signed with the UFC. And because remember, he was saying it's not worth fighting, you know, Ngannou for $8 to $10 million.
So, well, I don't know what you say about John Jones. The guy's also said he's going to quit after his next fight this fall against who we believe is Stipe Miocic. But then you know, no one ever quits in combat sports. Let's face it. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see who Ngannou. Who the PFL is well able to get for Francis, but you know, it's going to be a hard sell because, as like I outlined, is like what happens after the Ngannou fight? I mean, if it's a really good fight, maybe you get a rematch, but then after that, what's
yeah? Well, I mean, the problem too, we're focused just on Ngannou. It's like we're talking almost like their match room, and this is Joshua. This is all they got. You know, match room's got other guys besides Joshua.
Yeah.
You know, Top Rank has other people besides Fury, but for PFL, really, that's kind of all they have that's name value. Who it's like I said, if they could buy the Bellator, if they could, and I don't think they're going to buy Bellator. That they legitimately looked into it, but I don't think they're going to. Bellator's asking price is fairly high for them, and unless they can get a ton of money in the next round of fundraising, but if they had Bellator's roster. Then you start looking at maybe not heavyweight, but okay, if there's someone at a different weight class we can get, we might be able to put on fights. You know, if we can get O'Malley or Sterling, again, those guys are on long-term contracts, so you can't get Sterling and O'Malley. But if you did, you have a bunch of people at 135 now. We have Pitbull going to 135. We have Patty Mix. We got Haraguchi. You know, you got names there. You could put on fights at least at that weight class.
Yeah, I mean, part of it, I had a totally different question I wanted to ask you guys, but part of it is you have to, you can't just get people all the time. You've got to develop your own talent. And how do you guys see PFL doing that versus a Bellator or UFC? Like, when I look at it, I don't see a lot of homegrown talent development in PFL. Bellator has it. They've got good names that they've brought up. And sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that the PFL is starting to develop, at least internationally, a lot of names, or not a lot of names, but individuals. But that process is kind of long. You know, if you sign somebody 18, 21, whatever, it's still going to take 3-4 years before they actually get good at MMA. There's very few superstars out there that start at a young age and are able to be in a major promotion. So that's hard. The Bellator model, I always feel is just like, let's go look at a wrestler and sign them. That's how I feel like what they do. They just go to collegiate wrestling events and just sign people.
Jason's right. I mean, Strikeforce was great at developing talent, but we're in a different era now, right? Developing talent because UFC's, you know, they got so many more shows. They pulled in guys. They have contender series.
Yeah.
The other thing is PFL, I think when they started, the whole thing was that tournament gimmick, and they didn't have many cards. You can't really develop talent when you're running tournaments, and you can't throw young prospects in against veterans that are trying to win $1 million. You know, you can't David Machado and stuff. He's going to beat the crap out of some young kid, right? Who's just starting. Even if he was not a top fighter in the UFC, it was just a quality veteran. They're going to beat the crap out of guys. And so you can't throw them in the tournament. Now they're starting a development league in the European leagues. So there's some chance. Actually, I think their development league, even the term that could be wonders if they got guys enough fight. My understanding is people just are getting like two fights a year and stuff. You have young guys, you want to give them three, four, five fights a year. if you start doing that, it can start. But there's two tracks here. We have one, or you got to get going now. And now means you need stars, and stars don't exist in PFL. You don't even have like the Strike Force roster. We have a Tim Kennedy and Luke Rockhold and all these guys. Like if GSP had left the UFC back then in 2008 or 9, you had opponents for him in Strike Force ready to go. Jake Shields and Nick Diaz and stuff. There's opponents. You don't have that with PFL. So you gotta sign the guys and then hope you're around a couple of years and then bring these prospects up and let them beat those names and then become stars themselves. But it's a long process.
And I just don't think, and I think we all agree that I don't think PFL has that time.
Clock is ticking on PFL. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's two tracks. One, they got to succeed now on their first venture, but they better be ready to have prospects going because, no matter what, the well's probably going to dry up because the UFC is going to do something to prevent guys from coming over. We already seen they've changed their contracts again. So it's, conveniently right after Ngannou became a free agent. So, or right around that period. So it's, I think they are aware that not a large, but some top fighters could possibly follow the path, and they don't, they're not up. They're not looking forward to that.
Well, when I say the clock is ticking on PFL, I don't mean that in a bad way, just to clarify to people listening. It's just in the sense that, again, it's a money burning startup. So the clock is always ticking on you, and you've got to reach that point where you either hit cash flow positivity or investor satisfaction, or you're in a lot of trouble. Right. And so this is going to, it seems like they pivoted because they didn't have investor satisfaction about what was going on before. And so they're moving to this, and the 2024 is going to be a big year for them to show things. So random, totally different question for you guys. Part of Ngannou's deal is that he can get his own sponsors now, right? How valuable do you think that would be? In one sense, he's former UFC lineal heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou. In the other sense, he's fighting for the PFL, yeah. Which I don't want to denigrate them, but their pull is nowhere near like the UFC. While they might talk about social media all they want, but their live gate is nothing like the UFC. Their ESPN deal is nothing like the UFC. Their timing and placement is nothing like the UFC, right? So what do you guys think about the value of that aspect of his contract?
I would say that he is, he's perceived as a hero in Africa and perhaps maybe a little bit in France as well. France as yeah. Well. Yeah. So I think that it would cater to the international brands that may be watching him in Africa or in France, that a company would want to sponsor him because people are going to tune in and watch him, and then they'll be watching Francis. And then, so he could sell sponsorships related to that. So I think there's that tie-in. As far as how valuable he is to sell his own brand, I mean, here in the United States, yeah, it's a good question. But again, I think that he is proven to be and carries himself to be a big enough star that he may be able to forge some ventures with other people. I mean, with other companies that would be able to give him, not big top dollar, not UFC monster energy draw dollars, but still good top dollars. And if you put that together with, a big, African company or a big French company, there you go.
To access the bonus content of this show, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to bloodyelbowpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.
Thank you for tuning in to this Bloody Elbow Podcast Network production. Subscribe at bloodyelbowpodcast.substack.com. Give us your email and receive notifications when your favorite shows drop straight into your inbox. We're also found on a wide variety of podcast outlets, including SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Pandora, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Google Podcasts, MusicBee, RSS Radio, IMDb, and now also found in your app store on apps such as Downcast, the podcast app, iCatcher, Podcruncher, Podbean, and more. Just search for Bloody Elbow Podcast and you will get brand new shows throughout the week, including the Care Don't Care podcast, the Level Change podcast, the Hey Not the Face podcast, the MMA Vivisection main card and prelims UFC preview shows, the sixth round post fight show, Crooklyn's Corner, the sixth round retro, the Show Money podcast, the MMA Depressed Us, exclusive fighter interviews, and the return of the MMA Bunker.